and welcome all of you critical thinkers out there to another Throttle Up Radio. And I guess most of you know, but if you don't, this is a radio show that showcases critical thinking and its application in our daily lives. So it's not a, don't get concerned now, it's not a boring discussion of critical thinking. It's applied critical thinking, I guess you could say that, or it is, how can we use critical thinking in our daily lives to, well, to make things better, I suppose we could say that, to improve our ability to think critically and solve complex problems. And I guess that's what we're all about here. And I guess you could say that we're different. We are looking at the world from a different point of view. We are looking at the world from a different perspective. And hopefully, and I believe, you will find it refreshing. You will find it new and different and even compelling, because we do look at the world differently. We look at the world from a completely different perspective. And maybe we need to do that. I think that a lot of the things that we are seeing being generated by places like the mainstream media, from other places, it's all kind of predictable. It's all kind of the same stuff, warmed over, old ideas. So why don't we have some new ideas in our thinking and our discourse? And I was going to say political discourse, but this is really not so much a political show, although we do touch on some subjects that are politically based, but it's really not a political show. It's more of a show for those who enjoy intellectual stimulation, enjoy an intellectually stimulating discussion. And I guess that's what we are all about here on Throttle Up. And we like to think that there is an audience and a growing audience out there looking for something new, looking for something different, looking for a different perspective on things. And so I believe that you can find it here. And this will also, I guess the end point here is also stimulate further discussions within your own lives that I would classify as intellectually stimulating, different, new, innovative ways of addressing yourselves to the particular problems in your life, in the lives of your immediate family, and the lives of your community, and of course, the lives of your country. Now, this Throttle Up is a radio show designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is powered by High Velocity Reason. And I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. And I guess I should say that I am a pioneer in this field, which we call critical thinking or applied critical thinking. Or more specifically, I guess I could say, and this show is about, how do we think critically in a complex environment? And I guess that's more, it's more appropriate. Generally speaking, we talk about critical thinking, but we also look at how should we think critically in environments that are considered to be complex. In other words, this is not for casual reasoning, but it is for higher order reasoning, because we need to be able to get a grip on this challenge that we face often in our daily lives. And I know that I face this challenge all through my professional career. How do we deal with complexity? How do we think critically in a complex world. So I guess you could say that that's an area of expertise that I have. I'm a naval aviator, and I was trained in this field from a very early age. It started right out of college, where I joined the United States Navy and immediately went to flight training, which is also called the Naval Air Academy, as well as Aviation Officer Candidate School. That was a combined program that lasted almost 2 years. It was basically a two-year crash course on naval aviation and naval officer training. Now, our tagline for the show is Accelerate Beyond the Ordinary, and our motto is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And we also have a mission statement. So our mission statement for the show is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason. Okay, so when you think about reason, all right, think about, okay, what exactly do we want to do? Well, we want to engage higher order reasoning. And in order to do that, we have to be able to think critically. And if the reason is going to have any effect whatsoever in areas that are complex, in other words, the challenging situations that are considered to be complex, we have to be able to employ critical thinking in a complex environment such that we can reason effectively. All right, our website is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. And of course, Red State Talk Radio is our station and network. And they have a website too. I guess you know that, although you can find this show on other websites as well as TuneIn, I think. Might be some, or iHeartRadio, or one of those. I guess I have to look that up. I can't remember, and it may be both. I apologize for that, but I don't always remember where all of the places that you can find this show or find shows on Red State Talk Radio. I guess I should get the list out and mention it on a future show. So. If I can remember to do that, I will. The audio engineering services for Throttle Up is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are a particularly great group of folks to work with, very professional. We are proud to have them as part of the Throttle Up family, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and one of the gents that works with us on a regular basis, a guy by the name of Skyler. I'm not sure he wanted me to mention his name, but his first name is Skyler. And he's really a joy to work with. And so I would, for all of you out there that want some kind of audio engineering services, I want to create some kind of an audio for whatever purpose. It could be a podcast, could be a radio station show, it could be music, you name it. And then, and also part of a webinar, I suppose, you can look them up on the web, and then I would encourage you to use their services. They're pretty well set up to handle audio services like we have here. Okay, and then our show is organized into three parts. The part one is, of course, critical thinking. It's an ongoing discussion of critical thinking, and we're going to be talking about thinking critically in a complex world. And I guess we're going to be talking about that for some time because that seems to be a hot-button issue in this country. And then part two is our storyboard. Storyboard is... oh, it's often a story of America. Typically, it's politics because we kind of need to cover some of that with respect to the political arena And so we do. We don't always do that on Storyboard, but we typically do. And then part three is our radio essay. And a radio essay could be a little bit more in-depth treatment of certain issues or things. If you recall from previous shows, we and the radio essay, we talked at some length about The Art of War by Sun Tzu, and trying to get a grip on this whole situation of preparing for war if we need to, and I think we do. And as I record this show, North Korea has again launched another intercontinental ballistic missile. And so I guess a thorough discussion of The Art of War is appropriate. Unfortunately so, I guess we could say. Okay, so all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers are open with open arms, and where America finds solutions. All right, so that is, or that completes our introduction of the show for this week. Now let's go on to part one. Okay, welcome back. This is part one of Critical Thinking, or part one, which is part one of Throttle Up, which is all about critical thinking. And today, and last week, and today, this week, and probably in some number of future shows, we're going to be talking about this thing which we call thinking critically in a complex world. And so that we're going to be talking about, in essence, we're going to be talking about what is this thing which we call a complex world, or what is this thing that we call complexity, if it in fact does exist, and it does. When should we expect to encounter it? And once we encounter a complex environment or a complex world, what do we do about it? Do we think along traditional ways or avenues? Do we employ traditional avenues of thought? Or do we select a new highway? Do we select the critical thinking superhighway? Because it enables us to deal more effectively with complex situations or a complex environment. And the answer is yes. So in order to deal effectively when we encounter complex situations or a complex environment, we need to employ certain aspects of critical thinking. Otherwise, we're probably not going to do very well. We're going to make some serious cognitive or thinking errors, because complex environments, as J.W. Forrester has pointed out, complex environments and complex systems behave counterintuitively. And that means that the plausible tends to be wrong. So if that's true, and J.W. Forrester says it is, and I think most people believe him and believe this, which he pointed out many years ago. I remember that I was still a young naval officer when I first encountered this assertion by Dr. Forrester. And he's been proven to be right time and time again. So if, in fact, the plausible tends to be wrong with respect to a complex environment, then what do we do? All right, so that's what we are all about here on this show, and particularly in part one. So again, part one is thinking critically in a complex world. Now, if you remember from last week, and I'm going to be talking about this probably for some time to come, in the 2016 Future of Jobs report published by the World Economic Forum, they predicted that by the year 2020, critical thinking and complex problem solving will be the most in-demand set of skills in the global market, but also the hardest to fill. Also, another quote from the Wall Street Journal recently. They said that technology promises to make living easier, but it has complicated things instead. Another quote from SAP software company. How conquering complex technological challenges will help us reduce cost and give all of us time to focus on innovation. You notice that we're talking about complexity here, and what do we do about it? Also, another individual mentioned that managing software complexity through intent-based programming is the way to go. Software developers, by the way, are losing the battle with complexity, often without realizing it. Okay, now, if you remember from, I guess, the last few weeks, we've been creating a storyline here, and we're going to continue with this story that we have set up, this scenario, if you will. So to continue our story, you and I, are part of a Tiger team whose purpose is to provide customer training for deep water oil platform operators and managers in the specific area of risk detection and management. It's also referred to as operational risk management, or ORM, in some quarters. All right, and you remember from last week and maybe the last few weeks that we mentioned right up front that a deep water oil platform is in fact or does in fact represent a complex environment. And in fact is quite complex. If you want to take a look at this from a complexity standpoint, then I would encourage you to see the movie again, or see the movie Deepwater Horizon. That's a rather fascinating movie, and it does depict a tragic occurrence where 11 lives were lost. But it also points out the fact that this oil, or this type of oil platform, is extremely complex, and it is difficult to manage effectively, and lots of mistakes were being made and are made. And so our job is to try to figure out how do we do a better job of risk management on these oil platforms. Now, as part of our scenario here, we're part of a Tiger team, okay? And one of the things that we are now doing is that we are sitting around a conference table, and we're brainstorming. And one of the things that folks have asked me to do is to take a look and see if other industries have experienced the same kind of challenges with respect to complexity, and if they have, what have they done about it? Have they just swept it under the rug and threw up their hands and decided that they can't do anything about it because it's too hard? Or have they taken positive steps? Have they attempted to address themselves in some kind of a positive way to this challenge of complexity? All right, so that was my job. And some of the candidate industries, if you will, that we could look at. All right. The first one is, of course, the airline industry. We can look at that because they have and still continue to experience problems in that area. In addition to the airline industry, I guess we could say, we could make it a little bit more general. We could say the aviation industry, which includes airlines and military aviation. So how's the military handle complexity and how are they doing and stuff like that? All right. And the other industry is medical, or particularly medical surgery. They have addressed themselves to complexity issues, which is laid out very nicely in the book. I mentioned this many times before, and I would encourage you to read it because it is a rather, not only is it a fascinating book, but it speaks directly to what we are trying to address here on Throttle Up, which is how do we deal with complex situations in such things as the operating room or ER. And that book is The Checklist Manifesto by Dr. Gawande. The Checklist Manifesto is the title. The author is Dr. Gawande, and he has done a particularly good job of how he addressed himself, or how he and his team addressed themselves to the complexity challenges that were evident in these operating rooms. Also, selected military organizations in the air, on the sea, and on land, they would be a good place to go. Also, mine operators, and that's that completes the list that I have, but that's just scratching the surface. You get the idea. So we could do that. We could go and take a look at what these industries are doing and what they have done about this, if anything, and then sort of like use that as a launching pad for our efforts to create some kind of a meaningful training program for operators and managers of deep water oil platforms in the area of risk management. Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking about some aspects of critical thinking and this whole arena that we have chosen to immerse ourselves in, which we call a complex environment. Okay, we're back, and we're going to be talking about aviation, the aviation industry. And I guess the best way to start this is in a modern industrial society, as well as a modern military, are we going to encounter situations or environments that are complex? And the answer is yes, we are. There is lots of areas that we would consider to be complex. And the second question then is, will conventional thinking enable us to perform well in these environments? And the answer is no. The answer is emphatically no. And we keep making the same mistake over and over again. We keep encountering situations or environments that are complex, and we try desperately to use conventional wisdom, conventional ways of thinking, and they don't work. Things fall apart. We encounter catastrophes, and then we wonder why. And so we never go back, to the real problem. We never go back to the essence or the strategic pitfalls that we encountered along the way. We sort of focus on the specific details of the accident. We never really go back and look at it from a broader perspective, which we also call higher order reasoning. And so, unfortunately, that's the case. So we get back to our storyline, and we're going to be talking about the aviation industry. And as we prepare ourselves for for creating this this training program or set of training modules to address ourselves to complexity or how to manage risk management in a complex environment. So here's what I can say about what the aviation industry did and why did they do it with respect to what we can call human performance. So human performance in aviation, what exactly did they do? And are there any lessons learned along the way that will help us? Okay, so what we want to do here is to establish some parameters of a particular operational problem and then construct the operational scenario around this problem, dry run the scenario, develop some storyboards, and come up with some innovative solutions to this a particular set of problems. And so did they do that in aviation? So let's not reinvent the wheel here. We want to go and see if other industries, if you will, or other communities address themselves to a similar to a problem in a similar way. And if they did, what lessons learned can we gather from this? What can we understand with respect to the situation? Okay, so the first thing we can say is that in an abstract way, human performance is challenged by a number of things. The first thing we could say, and I've made a list here, so I'm gonna read from this list. The human performance is challenged by confusion and misdirection. That's the first thing. It's also challenged by complexity. Now, we're going to get into the definition of that because it's a little bit tricky to understand, but it's very important that we understand it. And complexity now has its own theory, if you will, or its own science, to put it generally. And that's a good thing because complexity is a tough one, and we have to understand what is it exactly. Also, human performance is challenged by poor or incomplete understanding of the problem. Let me say that again for emphasis. Human performance is often challenged by a poor or incomplete understanding of the actual problem. Now, it is also challenged by the inability to recognize mission-critical events and also the key aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving are not understood. All right, so let me continue with this discussion of human performance in aviation to see if we can understand what was going on in aviation, what is going on, and whether or not we can use some of the lessons learned to help us come up with a effective set of training tools and training programs to help the deep water oil platform operators and managers. So, in aviation, human performance in an increasingly complex aviation environment has always been considered to be a serious issue, and yet effective solutions have always been elusive. Now, let me stop there because I forgot to tell you where what document I am reading this from. So I guess I need to rethink about how I prepare for this show. But anyway, this is a textbook, and it is the title of it is Mission Adaptive Display Technologies and Operational Decision Making in Aviation. Okay, well, that's a mouthful. You can find this anywhere. It is available in all of the major outlets, book outlets. It's available anywhere. It is published by IGI Global, and it's considered to be an engineering science reference textbook. And the author, or the authors, one of the authors is me. All right, this is one of the books that I have published in that, or written in, is published, and it's out there in the marketplace. So it's authored by me, Captain Kevin Smith, and it's also my co-author for this book is Stephen LaRue. Mr. Stephen LaRue is a researcher as well as an aviator, and currently flies the Airbus, in addition to doing some rather interesting consulting work in the field of aviation. A rather interesting gentleman. He lives in Europe primarily, but I believe he flies out of Dubai currently. Okay, so again, human performance in an increasingly complex aviation environment has always been considered to be a serious issue, and yet effective solutions have always been elusive. How human operators perform in complex environments under increased time compression has been the subject of much debate. Many studies have been conducted and much has been written about aviation human factors, human performance, particularly under stress, is not well understood. This is because, until recently, observing such performance in actual operations was almost always impossible. Now, however, with the advent of full mission simulators, in this particular case, it's a full mission flight simulator, but there are also other simulators out there, and they're getting more and more popular. It is now possible to observe human performance in high-stress, time-compressed environments. And because we can observe these environments directly, have direct observation of these environments, we can uncover some of the hidden aspects of complexity and some of the hidden aspects of human performance in these arenas. Like World War One, I'm continuing reading this, and I'm just going to be scratching the surface here, but we'll continue this on future shows. So I'm continuing to read this section. Like World War One, during World War Two, aircraft accident rates during training exceeded aircraft losses from actual combat. It wasn't until after the end of hostilities that the newly formed U.S. Air Force, as well as the U.S. Navy, became quite serious about reducing the high aircraft accident rates. These efforts resulted in developing standardized training and operating procedures. Pilots were then required to go through formal checkout procedures, including special schooling whenever transitioning into a new aircraft. The standardized operating procedures significantly reduced the accident rates experienced by all services. After the Korean conflict, many felt that military aviation would experience a continued reduction in accident rates and a continuing improvement in the overall air warfare safety posture. This, however, was not the case. Cold War accident rates of military aviation after the Korean conflict continued to rise. The accident rate for the Boeing B-47, for example, remained excessively high during the course of its operational life. High accident rates were also experienced in the 1960s and 1970s by tactical forces flying high performance supersonic aircraft. The accident rates for the F-104 Starfighter, the F-A Crusader, and the F-105 Thunder Chief were all considered excessive. All right, so this points out that there was serious problems facing this industry with the inability to deal with risk management. Risk management was now getting away from the industry, and the reason for that is twofold. Number one is that the environment was getting increasingly complex as time went on, and also they were just really struggling to find some kind of effective solutions for this thing that we call risk management or operational risk management. How do you manage risk and keep your accident rate reasonably low or eliminate most of the human-caused accident rates? How do you do that? And so aviation was struggling, and they were coming up with ideas. Some of them didn't work. Others did work. And so let's find out what are the ones that actually did work so that we can at least get an idea of how we can address ourselves to the same basic issue or the same basic problem of risk management on deep water oil platforms. Okay, so that completes my discussion so far on critical thinking part one. And now we need to move along to part two of the show. And that will be coming up right away. Okay, welcome back to part two. Part two of Throttle Up is, of course, our storyboard. And this week, we're going to continue our discussion of American politics and continuing our discussion of this new book by Edward Klein. And the title of this book that we'll continue to discuss, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now, is All Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump. All right, so that's, I guess you could say that's the state of American politics. It's rather depressing for me. This is a bit hard to discuss, but we'd have to look at this issue. We have to look at it from a critical thinking standpoint to try to understand exactly what is going on. Pretty much the same thing in, I guess you can say, in general terms. When we look at complex environments, we want to look at a complex environment in such a way as to begin to understand what's going on or to begin to comprehend it. And same with American politics. In this arena, it is best that we understand what's going on. We understand why it is happening. How do people come to these positions or these belief systems? How, not what. So much, but how? How did this happen? What are the mechanisms in place? What are the human factors? What are the cognitive biases? What are the thinking mechanisms, if you will? And how do these people reason, or how do they not reason? So we'll address some of that on this show, and we'll try to make it as interesting as possible, albeit it's still a bit disturbing to see what's happening in the political environment. I guess you could say that the political environment today in this country is disturbed. The environment is disturbed. There's a lot of disturbed people that believe they have a voice in the ongoing discussion of what's happening in this country. And this disturbed voice, you know, I guess you could say in a free society with, you know, we could say that they will always be able to speak. But if a disturbed person is speaking, perhaps we don't really need to pay attention to them as much as they would like. So I guess it's one of these things where we also, the listeners or the people that listen or can listen, also have a choice in the matter. We can decide to pay attention, or we can decide to not pay much attention to what they're doing and their hysteria. So, yeah, the political environment is hysterical. There's a lot of disturbed people out there. So let me, and we talked about this book by Edward Klein, and he has a rather interesting chapter in there called The Unmasking. So he says that on the 15th of October, 3 weeks before the election, attorneys from the Justice Department, the FBI, and the National Security Agency descended on the FISA court to get a FISA warrant against Donald Trump and his associates. The lawyers took their places as before. The judge, a different one from before, which had rejected this, had reviewed the government's application for warrants and found it so legally unsound that he wondered if Loretta Lynch had ever bothered to have read it. The government application was presented with new electronic surveillance, however. This surveillance included telephone and internet data associated with American citizens, including Trump operatives such as Carter Page. Carter Page, a graduate of the Naval Academy, was a partner of Global Energy Capital. The government charged that Page, who spoke Russian, had met with Russian intelligence operatives in New York City attempting to broker a deal concerning an orchestrated attack against Hillary Clinton as the payout for a future lifting of sanctions. But Page was actually not a member of the Trump campaign, so his position was made up with respect to Donald Trump. The warrant was eventually granted. I know this is unbelievable, but it was. According to Edward Klein, the warrant was eventually granted to spy on this individual as well as the following individuals: Paul Manafort, Michael Flynn, Roger Stone, and Jared Kushner. Okay, so that is the unmasking that was done in a clearly illegal way. There was really no meaningful justification for doing that, but they did in fact. So they turned this agency in the FISA court against their political opponents, which is profoundly disturbing. You kind of not think this stuff goes on in America. You know, maybe it goes on in a banana republic, but it doesn't go on in America. And so you begin to think, okay, well, what alternate reality have we entered that would allow such a thing? So fast forward to Election Day. And we're going to call this section here, Trump in the Win. Now, the United States Air Force has a motto, and their motto is fly, fight, and win. That's the U.S. Air Force's motto. Now, Donald Trump did just that. He won against insurmountable odds. And Klein points this out brilliantly in his book. So it is worth a read to see, to get a firsthand account of what exactly was going on the day of the election for president. But I will go on to say that, but many, after being stunned by the election of Donald Trump, emerged from their stupor, possessing such rage at Donald Trump that it is nothing short of pathological. And then this gets us to what I call the shapers of public opinion. Now, you could say, why are these groups so outraged at the results, the unexpected results of this election? Doesn't this point out the vibrancy of America, that it is often unpredictable, and so all of the pointy heads, maybe they got it wrong, and maybe that's great, all right? So America might be behaving counterintuitively, but that points out that America might very well be a vibrant, albeit complex, socioeconomic system, and that's what happens in these complex socioeconomic systems. There may be some aspects of it which we know is true that are unpredictable. So I'm going to call this section here the Shapers of Public Opinion. The Shapers of Public Opinion is a major industry today, and it consists of the far left activist groups, mainstream media, Democratic Party, the movie industry, most of the movie industry, not all of it, late night TV, websites like MoveOn.org, social media, and others. Not all of social media, but a lot of it. Now, they are in the business of formulating public opinion, such that increasing levels of socialism, communism, and globalism can be achieved through each and every generation. That's their stated goal. Now, they operate often below the surface, but that's exactly what's going on. The right has also opinion makers on board and on their own stage. So these opinion makers exist also. And an example here is the Weekly Standard, which is a so-called a conservative magazine and website. Now, they were also wrong about Trump in the primaries. They were viciously against Donald Trump in the primaries, which I never really quite understood. You know, I mean, okay, you know, Donald Trump is his own person. He's not trying to be somebody else. And a lot of people found that to be refreshing. You know, he's not pretending to be somebody that he's not. He's his own person, you know, and he's got, you know, strengths and weaknesses just like anybody else. He doesn't profess to be perfect, but he does profess to be capable of achieving something for this country like he has in his own business. Now, they were wrong about Trump in the primaries. They were wrong about Trump during the general election and continue to be wrong about Trump to this day. The established right, which includes the Bushes, the Romneys, the McCains, the Murkowskis, and others, not plural, the Murkowski, Lisa Murkowski, Karl Rove, and others are still trying to take Trump down because he represents a threat to their agenda, which also includes globalism, free trade, but not fair trade, as well as other issues barely indistinguishable from liberal issues. Okay, but while significant groups appear to be aligned against Donald Trump, these members of the Never Trump movement, both from the left and the right, are angry, even livid, with the foreign vote, with the forgotten voters. Okay, they're not so much angry at Trump. They're really angry at people like you and me who voted for Trump. They're angry at us because they don't like us. And they're angry at us because we even exist. They didn't even know that we existed, or at least refused to acknowledge the fact that there is a group of voters that voted for Donald Trump that were the what we call the forgotten Americans. I could say that most of all, they were angry that these voters exist at all. And who are these idiots, quote unquote, and where did they come from? So that's what would they think of us who voted and all of the voter models utilized by both established Democrats and Republicans did not recognize this voting bloc, what we call the forgotten Americans. Who are the forgotten Americans? Do they still exist? Yes. Now, the voter models were biased against the forgotten Americans, and they overemphasized the following. The voter models overemphasized the minorities, the poor, the immigrants, the gays, the lesbians, the children, whatever that means, the greedy rich, and the corporations who are all guilty of greed and exploitation. Now, that is what their model had, their voter model had, all of these groups and identities. Some were favored groups and some were outcast groups. The missing voter, which is what I call the middle American working, the middle American working people, or what we call middle Americans, the workers of America. This was until Donald Trump. It was until Donald Trump arrived on the political scene. They were considered to be politically inconsequential. In other words, people like you and I were considered to be politically inconsequential, and so we were never addressed in any meaningful way by any of the political models that were being used, both on the left and on the right. And so there's a new political reality that has emerged. Thank you, Donald Trump, for doing that. And the reason, we'll get into that next week, but the fact remains that a new political reality has, in fact, emerged. A lot of people are angry, but not you and I. You and I are encouraged by this new turn of events, this unexpected turn of events. And so we'll continue with that next week. I can see by the clock on the wall that I'm getting pretty close to the end of this show, which we call Throttle Up. And so I need to close my discussions about the show. All right, so let me close by thanking Red State Talk Radio for this opportunity. They are a great group of people that I work with on a regular basis. And also thank you, all of you out there. Thank my listeners for tuning in and listening to this show. The show also will be available very shortly in podcast format. And we expect that to happen momentarily now because everything, I believe, all the technical stuff is done. And so it will be preserved. And going forward, most of these shows will be preserved in podcast format. And so they can be listened to, of course, at any time on demand. And, of course, I would like to thank the veterans out there, my veteran audience. Thank you for your service. Your service is much appreciated, and without you and your desire to help and serve this country, we probably would not be here. So thank you for that. And also the families of the veterans and the service members, all of you family members, thank you for helping and being there and also doing your part to serve this great country. All right, so I have completed that. We're getting to the end of the show, and thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week on another Throttle Up.